I'm going deep at the monocule. If it's the only thing I ever do, the car is where I sleep. Think that I might need a 62.
Welcome back to Any Given Monday. I've called Mark Anguiano the best player without status for a couple of years on the account, and he now has status. Obviously, he will need to play well at Final Stage to help get starts and all that kind of thing, but and he'll discuss what it means and what his goals are for Final Stage. And very talented, has dominated many tour events and the major developmental tour events for a long time, and just hasn't had a chance to get back to Q School because of COVID. So what I really like about this interview is his insight into what COVID did for his perspective on golf, what it meant to his life, and why he's okay that if he never made it. Thanks to Mark. Quick word from my wife about Good Walk Coffee, and then the interview with Mark Anguiano.
This is Steph, or Mrs. Monday Q Info. I'm here and happy to tell you about Good Walk Coffee and what a great product it is. It's something I drink every day. I drink Good Walk Coffee on those early days that I'm headed to the hospital at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I drink it the rest of the week when I'm getting those kids off to school. It's a coffee that tastes great. It makes me happy. It's an awesome product. It's an awesome company that supports Ryan in all of the great work that he does. And so if you'd like to help support them, head over to goodwalkcoffee.com, enter the promo code FIREPIT, and get 20% off of your order.
Welcome back to Any Given Monday. I think you're the first return guest to talk about your love. We just had Tom Whitney in, but Mark Anguiano, how are you, man?
Good, man. Thanks for having me on again.
First of all, I'm pissed off at you. I've called you the best mini tour player without status for like probably 2.5 or 3 years, most of the extent of this account. And now I cannot say that anymore. Congratulations, man, on getting to Final Stage.
Thanks. It's funny when you say that, when you attach that to my name, because I just don't think of myself like that. I think it's, I don't know, it's okay. I'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not what you want, but with when there's no Q School, you'd rather be that than anything else. I mean, you won the most important tournaments. I mean, the most important tournament in mini tour golf. So kind of just talk us through. I saw the video from the Korn Ferry Tour. You weren't sure if you had made it through. Kind of like, can you describe what the last few holes of Second Stage is like when you're right on the number?
Well, the course we played that week was really difficult. So I guess the situation I was heading into the final round was I was one inside the number on a difficult golf course. The cut going into the day was 2 under, and it ended up staying at 2 under after the fourth round was played. So we kind of were sure it was going to be 3 under to get in, and it just played hard. I mean, you can tell guys were struggling a little bit to make birdies out there. The course was a ball striker's golf course, I think. Putting was really difficult out there all week. So, yeah, I mean, coming down the stretch, you're just trying to give yourself chances. Or for me, I was just trying to give myself easy pars and maybe sneak in a few birdies, which I didn't do. I made one birdie on hole 7 and parred out from there. And coming down the stretch, I thought I ended up missing by a shot. But then once we signed the cards and saw the leaderboard, we saw it was in, which is pretty crazy.
So what's that moment like, Mark? I mean, obviously there's still a lot to do at Final Stage, but there has to be some relief that like you've kind of made it back. Again, we'll talk about Final Stage and what you need to do there, but Second Stage is the biggest in a lot of ways. So kind of what's that handing in your card and turning on your phone and looking at scores, or I think Kevin Prize told you that you were good. Like, what's that couple moments like?
It was pretty wild because, like I said, coming down the stretch, I was just making pars. I didn't really make any birdies, and I was basically at 2 under the whole day. really trying to make birdies. I was close, but I just couldn't pull it off. But I ended up being good enough because it was just playing that hard. And like I said, it wasn't a putting golf course. It was a ball strikers course. So you couldn't really make many birdies, I thought. So, but it was pretty crazy to think I'm this. And then I get in there and a minute later and realizing I'm in it was crazy.
I mean, is it happiness, relief, or is it like, you know how hard, I mean, really you have to finish in the top 40 at final stage to kind of set your schedule. Is it still a lot of work to do, some relief, a mixture of all of those, Mark?
It's 100% a relief, but it's also 100% not over with. Like we see every year, there's always a couple guys that come out of nowhere with conditional status or whatnot that get their PGA Tour card, but you just don't want to start the year in that position. Ideally, you want to obviously be full status. So yeah, there's four more rounds to go and set up a game plan for those four rounds and go from there and just play well. Essentially, you got to play pretty good to be top 40. There's a lot of good players.
Do you look at the 40 number, Mark? I mean, so for the people listening that don't know, first place, if you win, and there can be multiple winners, I mean, you can tie for first and all be exempt for the entire year. Obviously, that's a main goal. But do you look at the 40 number as important? Do you not look at numbers at all? Do you think like, hey, just go play and kind of figure out where you are as the week goes on?
I would definitely be satisfied. You kind of have to look at it as what your own goals are for the week. You create your own goals, and my goals would probably be to try to be in contention, but knowing if I'm not really in contention, I can still have a good chance of being a top 40 player without my best stuff, even if I'm not near the lead, like I said. So you kind of have to compartmentalize it a little bit, I think. So, but I think most players would probably say they're going to go into it as any other tournament and try to finish as low as they can.
What did you do different leading up to this year's Goose School? So you chose a different second stage site. That would be one of the first things. But like you and I had talked during the year numerous times that there was so much time between the two Q schools, and like your Colorado Open was so long ago, you were talking about resting and like just finding the right balance of being ready, because at the end of the, for someone with no status, this is the only tournament that matters basically. So like, did you do anything different leading up to Q School this year, Mark?
Well, last year was so depressing. I think a lot of guys can say the same thing. It was really depressing, to be honest. I mean, golf, sports, life in general stopped. So everyone kind of was dealing with the same situation, I guess. But it kind of put that much more pressure on this year. I definitely put more emphasis on this time of year than normal, just because it has been 2 years. And if you don't get through this year, at least for me, I think I was going to stop if I didn't get through this year. So yeah,
does it's that a make fine it, line. Does that make it easier, Mark, going in like, hey, this is it? Or do you put more pressure on yourself knowing like, hey, I mean, I get it. You don't want to wait another year to go like figure out if you can get status and play mini tour events. And I mean, that just gets old, right? I mean, he just gets tired of it. Do you feel like you're just like, hey, I'm made a little money this year. If I have to go start teaching or doing whatever you're planning to do, at least financially, I'm okay. So did that make it a little less pressure going into Q School this year? Or is it more because you know, or you kind of decided it could be your last year?
Well, during COVID, I really enjoyed being home. I didn't think I'd enjoy being home that much, to be honest.
Yeah.
It just really goes to show how traveling can wear down on you as a professional athlete. So this year it did put a little bit more pressure on myself, but sometimes it felt like it was not much pressure at all. It just kind of wavered a little for me, to be honest. So, but when I was actually playing, I think there wasn't that much pressure. I was just enjoying myself as much as I could. And just trying to hit good golf shots. I was just trying to keep it really simple.
I mean, Mark, you touched on the fact that you know, you enjoyed being time. I mean, I assume there's not really been enough time in your life that you've been at home consistently like you were during COVID. I mean, I assume that has made you appreciate what you miss more. Does that make the road harder now that you're out there?
It definitely sucks a little more and more every year. I think when I first turned pro, it was pretty exciting. I played actually a tournament in Europe right away. I was traveling way more than I thought I was ever going to travel after college golf, I would say. So yeah, the anticipation's greater, you know, to get out, get your butt out there and see the world. But once you start getting older and life starts happening, so you start to realize what's really important. So.
Do you still put a timeline on getting to the PGA Tour, or do you have to block that out, Mark?
Not really anymore. I mean, with COVID happening, everything kind of changed. Life goals and timelines and all that stuff got mixed up for a lot of people. So I think for me, it's just if I know I'm getting better, I got to keep trying. And if I stop getting better, I'm not going to keep pursuing it just because it's kind of a waste of time for me, and I can just move on knowing I tried my best. I mean, that's pretty much the way I'm taking it.
I mean, I think a lot of, like you said, I think a lot of people, I assume it, Mark, it's given you some perspective that like golf isn't as important as maybe you thought it once was, and you can be happy without golf a little bit easier than you thought might have prior to COVID. Is that accurate?
I would say so. I agree with that. There's a lot of things and a lot of sitting around we did, you know, during COVID. And if you thought about a lot of things in a good way, and it can change your perspective, you know, and you can sit back and be grateful for a lot of things and realize what you have instead of what you don't have. So that really helped me figure out what I want, you know, outside of golf, especially.
Do you think it can free you up on the golf course, Mark? Like just being comfortable with the fact that you may have put a lot of who you are into the fact of what kind of golf scores you are and status you are. Maybe you have learned in COVID that that doesn't matter as much and you can be a person. Does that free you up a little bit on the golf course? I know this is all kind of new to you, but does it free you up to just go like, hey, if I'm going to try my best, I'm going to work my ass off, but if it doesn't work out, that's okay.
100%. I think for me, that really clicked for me. During the COVID days. I mean, I guess we're still in COVID, you know, but
right.
When we were in deep COVID, I would say,
COVID, I love it. Yeah.
Deep COVID. We didn't play much golf at all. So, you know, I was okay without it. I really enjoyed what I had at home and all that stuff. So it definitely takes pressure off while I'm playing, but obviously, yeah, like you said, you still want to do your best and try to get to the highest level.
All right, let's go back to, is it 2018 when you missed it first stage or 2019?
2019, a couple years ago.
Okay. So I use that story that you've told, and for a lot of people that haven't listened, I'm going to ask you to tell it again, but I use that quote. You talk about that you were $20,000 in debt, and, you know, people were saying, go get a job. And I use the line all the time, and you said, I couldn't. Once I got to that point, there was no job that I was going to get that was going to get me out of $20,000 in debt. I just had to go play better. So, like, from that moment until here, Mark, once you got through second stage, have you been reflective about where you were at the last time you played Q School and now?
Yeah, because I think if I did miss at second stage, I would have immediately looked at it as, like, all of it would have been kind of a waste, and I could have I mean, you have regrets, you know, but you learn from those problems and issues that come along with life. But it's been a long journey, but it's been really awesome. I've done a lot of the right things in my process that I do at home and when I'm traveling. So when you just keep doing that and focus on what's in front of you, I guess it usually works out for most people, I think. And sometimes you have to rely on luck.
You know anything about the final stage golf course?
Not really. I've been there once or twice for a couple Mondays, but I know they have the Korn Ferry event on one of the other courses.
What's your plan for the week, Mark? I mean, how do you approach final stage versus like a regular tournament?
Yeah, I thought about getting there earlier because it is two courses, but I realized just don't do that and go like it's a normal event. It's just going to add a little more pressure than you would want. So I'm getting in Sunday night and then start my week Monday afternoon. And just like any other Korn Ferry event I would play in, or, you know, any four round event, I guess. So don't make extra days out of it when you don't need to.
What's your routine, Mark? So to give people some perspective, like, you want to find it, like, walk that line of not being too tired, not playing too many holes prior to, you know, grinding your ass off for 4 days. So Monday leading up to the first round, what's your, like, normal routine?
My routine, I guess, on a Monday morning would be I get in late, so I am going to sleep in a little bit just because it's East Coast time coming from California. Mm-hmm. Definitely try to get a few hours in there, but just take my time, especially when I get there to the course. Sometimes you can rush it and you're antsy to go play the course right away, but just really take my time, get there, you know, with a few hours to spare before I tee off. So that way I'm not rushing. I think that's pretty underrated. And then I think the second important thing is just recovery is underrated as well. So just don't overdo it physically. Just play 18 at the most each day, maybe even just 9 a day, and, mm-hmm. and be efficient with your time, because if you're out there all day, you're just going to overrun yourself, I think.
So are you staying with any, I mean, like, normally if you went to a mini tour event, you guys would like try to, you know, save a hotel, work together. Are you staying in a hotel by yourself, buddies? What's the plan on that side?
A few of us wanted to maybe look at Airbnbs, but one of the guys is like, nope, final stage, I'm staying by myself.
Yeah.
So then we're all like, okay, we'll just get our own rooms, I guess. Which, it makes sense. It's fine. It's an important week, so less distractions, the better.
Let's go back to the Colorado Open. So do you think if you wouldn't have won the Colorado Open or had, like, finance, do you think that you would have ever got to final stage, Mark? I mean, being what I'm saying is, like, financially.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I try not to think about it too much. I'm just glad I won it. That's all I can say.
I have to believe that that's like it just, I assume, had to be a huge confidence builder. I mean, it is the, you know, mini tour event.
Yeah, for sure. It is. It's the biggest one. And I found out this year that the winner gets a 25-year exemption as of now.
Yes.
So yeah. I'm going to be playing it probably every year.
Yeah, Neil Johnson won. And yeah, is very happy because as the event has grown, how the Monday or the qualifiers leading up to it are as hard as, like, a decent Korn Ferry Monday. So, yeah, it's a good exemption to have for sure.
Yeah, it's a well-run event now. It feels like basically a Korn Ferry event when you're there, except you're riding carts, which is probably better.
So you finish low and you don't get many starts, and this is the end. Are you proud of your career? Like, not many people can say they've done the things on the developmental tour level that you have.
Ryan with the deep questions. I like it.
Yeah, I like it. Deep today.
I like it. No, for sure. I think anybody who gives a valid effort in professional sports should be proud of themselves. It's pretty ballsy to do that, you know, just in general. Not many people get the opportunity to do that in whatever they want to do. So I'm very grateful for being able to play professionally. You know, it's not easy to play at this level or any level in golf. The mini tours are hard. It's hard to win on those tours. It's hard to win on McKenzie and Latin tour. And it's even harder to win Korn Ferry, and then even harder to win PGA. So if you're moving up in this game, you're a very successful player. So I think a lot of people are too hard on themselves and don't give themselves enough credit in this game. So I think you have to be nice to yourself.
Let's go back to a conversation that you said your dad probably doesn't even remember, but it's right after 2019 Q school. You missed at first stage. And, like, just tell people about the conversation that you had.
Yeah. Well, I just missed at first stage by shooting a really poor round last day to 2019. And I get back home and have like zero money. Just trying to figure out what I should do. Like, I was willing to help my dad out with work stuff, and he just said, like, why waste your time with me when you know you can get out there and play? Like, just keep trying. Like there's no hurt in going for it at least one last time, you know. And yeah, he believed in me, and so if he believes in me, why shouldn't I believe in me? I need to believe in me like that too. So but if you're working on the wrong things, like I thought I was, and not having the self-belief on the golf course, and you know, you have to change. And I think when you're that deep in trouble, it forces you to look towards the right things and really try to find what's right for you. And so for that, it's almost better to go through something like that and really figure out what's right, you know? So instead of just kind of going through the motions. So I think it was a positive thing for me in the end.
Are you still working with Bradley Hughes?
Not so much, just because he's so far across the country.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I wasn't able to make it over there. He's a great coach. I still follow all his stuff and new drills that he showed me. He's an amazing coach, but I have someone else helping me. It's Matt Picanso's swing coach as well. Matt introduced me to him earlier this year and has been helping me. So it's been really great.
I mean, let's talk about Matt a little bit for a minute. I mean, you guys have become close. I mean, you played on a lot of the mini tours, competed. I mean, we're 1-2 a lot and saw each other. I mean, it's pretty cool. His story and just you guys to get to final stage again together is pretty awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. This is Matt's first time getting to finals, which is freaking awesome. And to do it like after a COVID year, you know, that's pretty special for him to stay in it and stay patient with it. We actually just played together. We played at home the last couple of days at my home course, and he helped me with something in my putting that I was struggling with since last week. So we also just like to help each other and figure out our games, and his ball striking is a strength, and my short game in the past has usually been short chipping and putting. So we kind of just help each other in those different parts of the game, and we gel together with our personalities. So it's good to have someone like that. That's a friend, I guess. So,
yeah. I mean, is it nice to, assuming you both, you know, have status of some good, decent status of some sort, is it nice to have a friend that you've kind of gone through with and can rely on? Not that you won't have, I mean, not that you guys don't both know a ton of guys out there, but kind of nice to have someone that you've gone through the shit with the last 2 years and kind of knows where you're at.
Yeah, definitely. Because anything you can relate to anyone, it's going to bring you closer. So, yeah, it's just been nice. You know, we have mutual respect and all that good stuff. We have other friends that we hang out with, and we don't have to talk about golf all the time. It's, you know, it's almost just important to be focused on stuff outside of golf. So,
what's the caddy situation? Are you taking a friend? Like, when you have final stage, what's kind of your philosophy? Do you find someone that might know the course, or someone you know you're going to be comfortable with on the bag, or neither of those options, and you just pick up who you can?
Well, I've had my guy for – he's been trying to caddy for me whenever he can. He's been looping for some players the last couple of years on Korn Ferry and sometimes on the PGA. But Jaime Moreno, he'll be there with me next week. He was there at second stage and first stage, so – he lives in Bandon now, and caddy's there when he's at home. So, yeah, he's.
Is it nice to have someone
getting better?
I mean, like, that's got to be a huge comfort level, right? I mean, someone to go into like the most important event of your career in some ways, like with somebody that knows your game. And it really, for guys like yourself, of course, you are to just help and those kind of things, but it's more of like a caddy that knows when to push you, when to like shut up, those kind of things, right? That is kind of more as important or more important than like talking through yardages and reading breaks and those type of things.
Yeah, I was just about to say he's getting better and I'm getting better at like understanding each other too. And that's pretty valuable to me. So, and we're also friends off the golf course. We met when I was like in high school. He was working at the golf course I was practicing at. And so we just kind of kept in touch ever since. And he's been you know, through the PGA and all that stuff. So he wanted to start caddying. He needed a change of pace as well with his life. So he's been doing it for a few years. He's a really, really good caddy. So I would love to always have him on the bag, you know. So it's nice to have a friend like that on the bag too.
All right, dude. So what, I mean, do you set goals? Like, do you look past this week? Do you set like this season? I would love to be, I mean, obviously everybody would love to be in the top 25. Do you set hard goals like that, Mark? Or are you just like, hey, I'm going to concentrate on this week and then figure it out after that?
I don't know. I don't really think about that stuff too much, to be honest. I used to a lot, but it's just, I mean, especially with COVID last year, it's such a far and long process. Even if you met your goals, like getting on tour or whatever, it would have taken 2-3 years anyways. So, but like, what, how do I get there with small steps is kind of how I look at it. So I don't know. I'll get there eventually, but I'm not thinking about it too much. I'm just thinking about next week and all that stuff. So that's pretty important next step ahead.
I mean, you touched on it a little bit, Mark, and I know I asked Kevin Elwin. I used to talk to Kev, like, say, you know, Kevin Elwin is like a mini tour legend. Like, this last 2 years has got to be amazingly frustrating because you were playing so well. Not that it wouldn't have been if you weren't playing well, but there's no like light at the end of the tunnel outside of financially. Like, you were playing for 2 years for nothing, really. I mean, it had to be amazingly frustrating.
It was. And it's nothing anyone can do, but like a lot of the golf courses stopped kind of allowing their usual mini tour events to happen because COVID really affected public play in a good way. Like, a lot more people are playing golf now. So that's a great cause to have, but unfortunately they just didn't have enough room for us. So we're playing, you know, courses that are a little easier, which is fine. But in the end, it wasn't like the best preparation. It's not saying that it was bad preparation, but obviously like we were playing a little bit better golf courses in general. So that was a little frustrating. But when I got to second stage last week, I was super happy because it was actually like a proper golf course.
Yeah.
Pars were good instead of, you know, you had to make 6 to 8 birdies around to win. So that was nice to see.
Let's talk a little bow tour to lighten up the mood.
Yeah.
For those that don't know, it's one of my favorite tours. So how did you first hear, I mean, how long has the bow tour been around for, first of all?
Well, actually, I should know more about this, but Steve Boveri is Bo. He's the guy that runs the show.
Right.
Everyone,
how did he become Bo? I mean, because he wears the cowboy hats all the time?
I'm not sure. I have to ask him next time I see him. But he is the man. Everyone loves that guy. He used to do the Pepsi tour, and then he kind of got away from it, and he started his own tour, Bo tour. I'm not sure when, but I could be wrong, but it could have been like within the last 12 years, 10 years. But so he does a lot of two round gigs.
Give some people some perspective of what mini tour is life on the Bo tour. So Bo just like puts his cell phone number up on the website, and that's how you enter events, right?
Yeah, you got to text him and say you're in.
And is it just like a group text of all the players?
And then he'll send a mass text out on a piece of, like, it's a picture of a piece of paper printed out with the tee times.
Handwritten or is printed?
No, it's printed. He's pretty organized considering, like, he actually does a really good job. It's not all sloppy.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but there's a lot of cash games, side bets, all that good stuff.
And it's all cash, or it was at one time. I don't know if it's all cash.
Yeah, you should do cash when you play it, because that way you can just get your winnings right back right away.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, it's awesome.
But, I mean, all you're looking for is, like, a good place to play and a place that will pay you and those kind of things. And, I mean, like, Bo checks all those off, right? I mean, it doesn't – it's a great place to play because all of those things, like, okay, he's organized. The fields are okay, and you get paid right away.
Exactly, and you play, like, actually not bad golf courses. We've been going to a site where they've had first stage before and stuff like that. So he's been doing a good job. He's killing it for sure.
What's the favorite tour to play on outside of the obvious? ones? Like, what's the favorite mini tour that you've played on?
Well, the favorite events are the Bow Tour. He does two-man team events, like one-rounders.
Yep.
Occasionally. And so it's fun. You just go with someone, and he had one at Bear Creek a few weeks ago. So you just do best ball and try to shoot low. It's pretty fun. You both put in like $300. So
yeah,
it's a little bit of money on the line.
What let's talk a crazy, you're done with mini tour. So let's talk the craziest mini tour story you have. You have to have.
Oh man.
You have
craziest mini tour story
or Monday Q story, whatever.
Well, the craziest Monday Q story is the one where me and Ben Griffin were playing with Chase Hanna.
Oh,
I'm sorry,
God, that is,
Chase, to say the story. But
oh my God, I've told that story so many times on Twitter that I'm sure to, but go tell it because it's really crazy.
We were playing the Valero Monday. What year was that? 2019?
Yep.
And Chase is playing really well, and me and Ben are just playing okay. So he has a really great chance of making it, and it's like the 13th hole par five. He's like 3 under on his round, and he hits the second shot to like 2 feet. Might have been 2.5 feet max. Like, it was really close. And this was when the rules for flag sticks just changed that year. You can leave the flag sticks in. And these flag sticks were kind of janky and firm. Like, it was the fiberglass. It wasn't the skinny ones. Anyways, he like goes ahead and tries to finish and taps it in from like 2 feet, and the pin like knocks it out. Like, it should have gone in without a pin, obviously. It was right in the middle from 2 feet. Knocks it out, and he's like dumbfounded. Me and Ben were staring at each other, like almost laughing because we couldn't believe like how the heck that stayed out. So he just tapped it in, finished the round at 4 under after that. He parred out. And because of that tap and not going in, there was a playoff at -4. So he was in the playoff with, lo and behold, Corey Connors.
Yep.
And Corey won the playoff. And it was 6-1?
Yeah, 6-1. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about that.
Yeah, and Corey hit a wedge to 6 feet on the first hole. After Corey had made a 15-footer on 17 and a 30-footer on 18.
I can't believe I forgot that part.
I mean, that is the craziest story. Like, if Corey Connors does not send Chase Hanna a case of beer, every time I see Chase, he's playing Challenge Tour now. Like,
okay,
he's kind of got crappy European status, so he's like in between. Sometimes he's on like European events and whatever. Every time I see him, I'm like, holy cow. It's the crazy amount of events that have happened in order for Corey Connors to Monday qualify and win that event are insane, because it started the week before. He was in Puerto Rico or something and bogeyed, kind of played it crappy on the back nine of Friday to miss the cut.
And wow,
he would have never made it had he made the cut. He missed the cut by like one or two. Then Chase Hanna, then the two putts, then the putt in the playoff, and then he wins. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I can't believe how big that story has kind of gotten, like with you like saying it on your Twitter, but it's like,
it's insane. It's an insane,
pretty crazy. I was like in that group.
Yeah, it's an insane set of scenarios that had to happen in order for Corey Connors to win the Valero. It's pretty wild.
It's just so cool to see stuff like that. It's like that women's tennis player that won the US Open.
Yeah, it's just wild.
You know?
Yes, agreed.
Yeah.
Mark Anguiano, no longer the best mini tour player in the country because he has status. Dude, you're the man. You know, I'm a fan. You've been awesome to me. And, I hope you play well at Final Stage. Have a great season. I'm sure I will see you out there at some point.
Thanks, man. No, thanks for having me on again.
Thanks again to Good Walk Coffee for supporting me. I just can't thank them enough. Go to goodwalkcoffee.com and use the promo code FIREPIT for 20% off your complete order.